Good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here. Today is Tuesday, June 30th, 9 a.m. We will start with everyone standing, please, for the Pledge of Allegiance. And if everyone could remain standing as we have our invocation by Rabbi Shalom Bachner from Congregation Beth Shalom.
Ask that you join me in creating a spiritual intention for this meeting, a kavanah, as it is called in Hebrew. In the name of the Eternal One, the God of many names and many peoples, the source of life and the life of all the universes, we say thank you for the gift of a new day. Thank you for the many blessings in our lives. Thank you for the ability to attach ourselves to important words and work, and for the honor to participate in this meeting. As we know that even short moments of gratitude can shape the way we act and feel during the day, may these minutes of centering ourselves, of finding our breath, and noticing our heart and our intellect help us as we enter into the details of today's agenda and duties. Judaism teaches in Pirkei Avot, the sayings of the elders, a rabbinic text from the very start of the Common Era. Rabbi Chanina, the deputy high priest, taught, "Pray for the welfare of the government, for without it, people could eat each other alive." At our worst, as humans, we are lower than animals, cruel and violent. And at our best, as humans, we are higher than angels, capable of true acts of selfless compassion. Therefore, I pray for our county, for the various levels of officials, and in particular, for this assembled Board of Supervisors. And I ask that today we all receive wisdom to govern well and fairly, despite the conflicting interests and issues that arise, a deep sense of the true needs of the people of this county, a mighty thirst for justice and righteousness, a sense of purpose and joy in our work, confidence in our abilities to hear and speak and to weigh all matters, the continued ability to work together in harmony for the greater good of all, particularly when there's disagreement and challenge, and a sense of personal peace in our lives, our families, our individual communities, and neighborhoods. In the same rabbinical text, Pirkei Avot, chapter 1, verse 18, Rabbi Simon, the son of Gamliel, says, "The world is established on three principles, justice, truth, and peace. As it is said in the book of Zechariah, truth and the verdict of peace are for you to adjudicate in your gates." May this be the case today and all days, and in everyone's own way, may we all say, Amen.
Rabbi, thank you very much. That was great. Okay, we will start off with a presentation here from a report from the Carnegie Arts Center. Lisa McDermott. Lisa, thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. It's nice to see you all. And I appreciate you giving us the time to update you on what's been happening at the Carnegie Arts Center. We're pretty excited about what's going on down in Turlock and across the county, and we hope that you will be too. As most of you will know, the Carnegie began its life in 1916 as Turlock's first public library. It was converted to a community center in 1968 after the move of the library to its current location. And ultimately, through the efforts of local artists, it became Turlock's gallery and art center by the early 1980s. With government, business, and community support, renovations were underway on the historic building in 2005, when, as many of you will recall, arsonists struck the facility. Following that disastrous fire, new plans were drawn up and the city committed to the reconstruction and expansion of the Carnegie in 2009. And we know and recognize that it was not an easy decision to have made during the Great Recession, but the City Council, with community support, showed faith in the board of the Carnegie Arts Center Foundation, the nonprofit that was assisting the city with the renovation of the building, and they showed great foresight in imagining what a new art center could be. In 2011, the nonprofit foundation took on all operations of the new Carnegie with a 20-year lease from the city of Turlock. And today, we are approaching the beginning of our fifth season of operations, presenting exhibitions and programs. And I want to share just a few of the highlights of the last 4 years with you. The vision that we have for the Carnegie is to be the premier arts and cultural center in the Central Valley. Through exhibitions and programs, we can explore and celebrate the cultural and creative heritage of our city, our county, and our region. Through exhibitions and programs that originate outside the Central Valley, we can bring rich ideas and ideals for the local audience to share. And capitalizing on the popularity of at least one major exhibition each year, we bring visitors from beyond our region to experience the rich creative environment that we're creating in this area. We have a wonderful and diverse board of directors and a very small but very dedicated professional staff. And we are very fortunate to have the support of several local businesses that provide us with in-kind assistance for a lot of different things, from painting our galleries to providing our accounting services. And we could not operate without the help and commitment of a strong core of volunteers who come from throughout the county to help us out at the Carnegie. They do everything from customer service to giving tours to helping in a variety of community and public events. These include retirees, Cal State University Stanislaus students, high school students, and people from all walks of life. But everyone shares a commitment for the goals and the arts in this region. Our exhibition schedule is designed to create a balance between blockbuster exhibitions like Ansel Adams, Edgar Degas, Pablo Picasso, and Joan Miró, who we featured in the last 4 years, and a balance with the exhibition of works by regional artists like Yvonne Porcella, Roman Lawrence, and our annual Central California Arts Showcase. We were fortunate to have the generous participation of Matt Swanson and his family last year, presenting his impressive collection of classic guitars and rock and roll memorabilia. It was a little bit of a stretch out on a limb for us to present a music-centered show, but it was also about design and the role that the arts play in the lives of different kinds of people. And we brought visitors from all over Northern California. And for the special rock concert event, we had fans who flew in from Connecticut and Colorado to attend that event. Our schedule is now firmed up for the next 2 years. Currently on view in our galleries are regional photographers from the Photo Collective Group, who are exhibiting in our lobby galleries, and the work of elementary school children presented in our main gallery. So on the same walls where last year we had Spanish surrealist Joan Miró or Pablo Picasso the year before that, this year, this summer, we have kids from Turlock, Hillmar, Denair, Ceres Public Schools. Coming up this fall in our schedule is an exhibition of probably the most important artist of the Art Nouveau era, think Paris, 1890s, Alphonse Mucha. This is an exhibition that will feature 74 works by Mucha from the single largest private collection in the United States of his work. And then coming up in January, we'll be focusing our spotlight on the sculpture of Oakdale's Betty Saleta. I think you all, if you walk outside this building, you're familiar with Betty's work. Since our opening in 2011, we've presented a wide array of educational and entertaining programs. Probably the most popular is our Family Fridays series. This is a monthly event that features a new activity every time that explores a wide range of creativity. It can be theater, it can be dance and music, it can be making visual art, you name it, we've tackled it. While the events are designed for children, they are also intergenerational, and we get just as much hands-on participation from the parents and the grandparents who come as we do from the kids. For our more grown-up audience, we present a regular series of lectures that draw on themes presented in our exhibitions and also on just topics of general cultural interest. Last December, we had a lecture on Nazi-era looting of art and the restitution of that art, and we had over 180 people from the community attend that free lecture. Our partnerships on music, literary, and theatrical and dance programs are growing every year. We're working with groups like the Modesto Stanislaus Poetry Center, Turlock High School, CSUS. Their jazz studies program has been doing a concert series for us. And we have the Merced College Theater Society performing, and we've even featured Central West Ballet. Performers have included students as well as professional performers who come to us from throughout the Valley and from the Bay Area. Enrollment in our art classes remains steady. Last year, we were able to establish the Express Yourself Scholarship Fund, funded first by the family of Justin Ferrari in his memory and now funded through many community contributions. We have a significant resource that provides assistance to low-income students who want to attend art, dance, and theater classes. Spreading the word about our class programs is a major goal for us right now. Our partnership with the City of Turlock does stipulate that at least 25% of the classes and programs that we offer are presented for children or teens. And I'm happy to say that we are more than meeting that goal at this time. An important and essential element in our efforts to serve the young people targets arts education in partnership with the public schools. Field trips have brought students from kindergarten through high school in to see our exhibitions. In 2014 alone, we had 2,908 school children from 10 school districts. That was from Los Banos to North Modesto, from Patterson to Sonora, and that was 39 different schools brought field trips to the Carnegie. And that's just in 1 year. Teacher evaluations from those field trips have been overwhelmingly positive. Some teachers have brought their classes each of the past 4 years, and they rely on the Carnegie to provide a quality art engagement experience for their students. This includes a wonderful continuing partnership we have with the Ceres Unified School District. We provide a field trip experience in the spring each year for all of their fifth grade students. Every school visit that comes includes a gallery visit with a docent and a hands-on art lesson, which allows the students to connect up the ideas and concepts from the art that they see in the gallery to creating a work of art that they make themselves and get to take home to remember. The Carnegie is a pretty active place every week, and in addition to our own classes and programs, last year we were the site for 30 different community rentals. We had private parties and weddings. We had nonprofit groups present their programs and fundraisers. We had school events. We had local businesses use our facility for trainings and board meetings. The rental activity continues to increase each year, and it remains a vital part of our financial success. A brief look at our statistics from 2014 shows the level of activity that we're experiencing. We know that our reach goes throughout Stanislaus County and beyond, with visitors checking in and signing our guest book from Santa Cruz, San Francisco, Napa, Los Angeles, as well as from other states and other countries. Our membership has remained very steady over 4 years, and 70% of our members have been with us since our first year and have continued to renew annually. We have many levels of membership that provide benefits of discounts and special events, but by far the most popular benefit of membership is participation in the North American Reciprocal Museums Association. As a friend-level member at the Carnegie Arts Center in Turlock, you enjoy membership benefits at a list of more than 700 arts, culture, and history museums across North America. As part of our commitment to the City of Turlock, when the foundation took over operations of the center, we have established an endowment fund. The fund has collected to date almost $1.5 million so far, and pledges are scheduled to build that fund to just over $2 million by 2022. Major donors to the endowment have received naming recognition on some of the Carnegie's public spaces. Last year, we installed our founder's wall, which commemorated donations by 75 donors to the endowment fund who made pledges and donations of $10,000 or more. The Friends Wall was just unveiled in January with 57 donor names, and we have plenty of room to add more names if anyone is interested. The endowment fund dollars have been invested now for more than 2 years, and last year we received $50,000 in revenue at the end of the last fiscal year, which was added to our operating budget. Approximately $16,000 in additional revenue was rolled back into the endowment to further growth. If you want to keep up with our programs, exhibitions, and activity in the coming year, we have lots of ways to do that. Our website, www.carnegieartsturlock.org, Facebook page, email newsletter, Twitter and Instagram accounts, and a blog that's updated weekly. So you can look at any of those places for interesting updates on activities and events coming up. We have a full and interesting schedule of exhibitions planned for the coming season, but by far our biggest push will be kicking off the celebrations of the 100th anniversary of the Carnegie Building in 2016. We formed a committee to plan events and projects to commemorate and celebrate our history, including we've just confirmed our fall exhibition of 2016 is going to feature sort of the history of the Carnegie Library with an exhibition of original art from children's book illustration artists. So we've seen a lot of changes in the last 100 years, and we are very excited about what the future will bring. And I am happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Lisa, thank you very much. Any questions for Lisa? Supervisor Gaines?
Yes. Thank you very much for coming in. And I'm very familiar with this. This is an exciting place. It's very unique. And I don't know that the public understands how unique it is. I look at the Carnegie Arts Center because the first programs that were cut when school funding went down were the arts, music. And here you have an opportunity to bring the kids in, and you're essentially doing what schools aren't doing. What happens? You said you had 10 schools participating? Is that
10 districts.
10 districts. Okay. Mm-hmm. And if we try and expand that so that every district has an opportunity to come by there, what happens if the district can't afford it? What happens? I mean, there's costs associated with everything.
Well, through fundraising, we've developed a school bus transportation fund, which each year is providing funding to the school districts who want to send kids. So basically, any school, at this point, we still have funding, and any school that wants to can apply for a grant. We haven't turned anybody down. We'll fund up to $250 for a school bus for a school coming even more than 20 miles away from Turlock. And that is the single biggest impediment for the schools. They will make the time to come, but it's the cost of the bus. So when we can provide that funding, the schools can come. As I say, we've had schools from Mariposa, from Sonora. During the Ansel Adams exhibition, we have schools from Manteca and Lodi sign up for field trips. So that is available. It's on the information's on our website, and we're already getting requests for field trips for this coming fall for the MOOC exhibition.
Perfect. So maybe the 10 districts that participate, if you'll send that email list to me, and then the districts that aren't, we will. I'll send it out to these folks, see if we can get them engaged. In fifth grade, is that what our target audience
is? Well, we've done field trips for as young as kindergarten. Depends on the exhibition, what the curricular tie-ins and what's appropriate material to be discussing, but we can always find ways to engage kids with the arts. But typically, the field trips range from third to sixth grades are the primary target audience.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Do a field trip for the Board of Supervisors.
Anytime, gentlemen.
Great. Thank you. Lisa, you're doing great stuff down there. And actually, I just want to mention you guys are, as part of the arts, media, and entertainment, going to be an integral part of our focus on prevention as we move forward with all that. So anyway.
We are happy to be participating.
Very good. Thank you for being here.
Thanks so much.
Okay. So we will now move on to public comment. I don't have any cards today. Is there anyone who would like to speak about an item that is not on the agenda? Anybody? Okay, seeing none, we will move forward. Our consent calendar, we are going to actually pull item B2 and bring that back at another meeting. I think we have some corrections to make on that. Any other consent items to pull?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make comment on item B9.
B9, okay, we will hold that one. Any others? Okay, very good. With the exception of B2 and B9, do I have a motion for the consent?
Motion to approve.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 4-0. And let's go to item B9.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to make comments on this. This is core security budget. Once again, it has exceeded. Our costs have exceeded what the budget is. Although I'm not going to oppose this item today, I want to remind this board that there's a fund balance that is continuing to dwindle, and when that runs out, the state of California is going to have some big decisions to make. The local courts and the Board of Supervisors are working well together on this issue. The problem is the funding comes from the state of California, and it's my opinion and my stance that they get what they pay for, and that the local taxpayer should not be subsidizing what the state of California should be paying for. If the state of California wants the best security, our sheriff's department, then they need to pay what our costs are. And if they're not willing to, then they are going to have to make decisions on what level of security they want. But if they're going to get our top-notch service, they're going to have to pay our cost. And nothing more, not asking for a profit off of it. I'm just asking for our basic cost to be met. And so just a reminder that that time is coming and that the state of California AOC needs to take a look and be aware that this board's not going to use our limited tax dollars, which the state doesn't give our fair share anyways, that we're not going to subsidize their service. But, Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to oppose this today. I'll make the motion to approve.
Very good. Any other comments on that before we move forward? Okay, we have a motion on B9 to approve. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Passes 5-4-0. We'll move on to item B17.
Can we go to the 905?
Oh, I'm sorry. I guess we'll start with the 905 public hearing.
Good morning, Chairman Withrow, board members, CEO Risen, County Council Doring, Jamie Eggers, here this morning to present the continuation of our June 16th public hearing to consider the adjustments to the Stanislaus County franchise maximum rates for solid waste collection services. Joining me here at the table is Mary Mayhew, Assistant Director, and she'll be presenting this item this morning.
Good morning. As background, the unincorporated portions of Stanislaus County are divided into four separate franchise areas, each of which contain a mixture of residential, commercial, and drop box customers. In exchange for franchise fees, the franchise hauler receives the exclusive right to the residential and commercial accounts within their respective areas. Stanislaus County retains the ability to regulate the haulers and set maximum refuse and haul rates. Staff worked with a consultant and the franchise companies to develop new base rates for refuse collection, and on June 18, 2013, the board adopted the new base rates that went into effect on July 1, 2013. For four consecutive years, these rates may only increase or decrease by the change in a series of price indexes. This is the second year of the index-based adjustments. There are five components affecting these proposed rate adjustments: the labor component, fuel, collections, Fink Road landfill disposal component, and the Stanislaus Resource Recovery Facility disposal component. The 24,098 subscribers to residential weekly service will see an increase between 0.02% and 0.57%. This increase translates to between a 1 cent and 14 cent increase in rates. For the 2,938 commercial bins in service, the proposed rates vary from a 0.06% decrease to a 0.51% increase. This proposed change translates to between a 5 cent decrease and a 45 cent increase. Requests for Dropbox service are on an as-needed basis, and all haul charges would increase from 0.2% to 0.6%. This translates to a proposed increase of between 42 cents and $1.26. For Turlock Area 3 special services, and this applies only to this area as the newest franchise agreement, 7-day rental customers will see an increase of between 11 and 13 cents. The staff recommend that the board approve the recommended adjustments to the Stanislaus County franchise maximum rates for refuse collection services in franchise areas 1 through 4. And that concludes our presentation. If you have questions.
Very good. Thank you. Does the board have any questions? None. Okay. Any questions from the public? Okay. Okay. So I guess we will open the public hearing for the questions. Any questions from the public? We will close the public hearing. Okay. And we will bring it back to the board for recommendations.
Motion to approve all staff recommendations.
We have a motion to approve. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 4-0. Thank you guys
Thank
very
you.
Much. Okay, now we will move to item B17.
All right, thank you, Chairman Withrow. Board members, included in your packet this morning is a annual report for Stanislaus County based on the calendar year 2014. Last year, I was looking through the county code under Chief Executive Officer to make sure I was fulfilling all my responsibilities. And I came across a code section that actually surprised me a little bit. It said that it's the responsibility of the Chief Executive Officer to prepare and submit to the Board of Supervisors at the end of each calendar year a report on the finances and administrative activities of the county for the preceding year, together with such recommendations as may be appropriate to provide for the betterment of public services. And as I read that county ordinance section, I couldn't remember that in my 16 years in the Chief Executive Office ever bring an annual report to you, and came to the conclusion that probably prior CEOs interpreted that the budget message in the final budget probably sufficed to meet the requirements of that code section. But in an abundance of caution, as well as just to highlight some of the great things that are happening in Stanislaus County, I asked my staff to work on with the departments on putting together an annual report, and I'm extremely proud of the work that they've done. I think it provides a nice highlight of some of the things that occurred in our organization and our many departments this past year. And I'd especially like to acknowledge the work of David Jones, our public information officer, who took the lead on this, and he did it with all in-house resources. And I thought he just did a fabulous job on it. I also want to acknowledge the finance and operations team who came alongside David to assist him in this effort, as well as all the department heads and staff that helped in his preparation. So before you this morning, just for your acceptance, is our annual report. And also, if you have any thoughts as to whether you would, you know, what you would like to see, whether you think the budget message suffices for meeting the county ordinance, or whether you would like to see a document such as this prepared, and if so, would you like it for broader distribution? Would you like us to have copies made of it that you could pass out to constituents or use it at meetings? So a little direction. Also, one of the things that was confusing to us as we looked at the county code was trying to differentiate whether it was by a calendar year, which seemed to be the implication, but it says by the end of each calendar year, or whether you like it on a fiscal year, which is how we typically do things as an organization. So any direction that you want to provide would be welcome. But like I said, I'm very pleased with the report that's before you, and hope you'll find it a useful tool.
Very good. Thanks, Dan. Any comments?
I just want to say this is excellent. It's such a great read, and very easy for the public to read this document and know exactly what's going on in the county government. Almost want to challenge to say, hey, how can we make the budget this easy to read? And no offense to those CPAs who like all those numbers. But you try to read the county budget, and then you read a document like this. This is so much more public-friendly. Maybe there's a way to make our budget friendlier. So just a thought. I don't know exactly how that would work. I know we still have to have our legal budget and all the rest, but I just want to congratulate you and the team and David Jones on a great report. And I know this is your first try out of the gate, and I think it's excellent.
Thank you.
Very good. Supervisor Chiesa?
I would concur. It has to go on a fiscal year. It should come out with the budget, I think, this document, because it ties in. The one issue that I think the public doesn't understand is the time and effort it takes to make this. And at budget time, it's a very difficult If you see the people work on Friday nights late on weekends, so I have to throw it back. This is good for the public, good for public consumption. Assuming we have the resources to do it, printing more than a few hundred copies would be out of the question for me. Online, accessible online on our Facebook page. It is excellent work. It is definitely easier to read than our budget, but it has essentially the same components that are in there. It's just a more concise document. So,
very good.
Yeah, it's a nice product. It's a bit done, but to me, it's kind of like a budget summary to me. I don't know if it's necessary to really do this every year myself. I don't know how much cost do we have in this.
This was all done with in-house resources, so there was no additional cost for preparing this, just the human cost of people taking on the extra work.
Well, it's a nice read. I mean, it's very well done. I mean, I like the graphs and the pie charts and summaries of what each department has done. If the public likes it, I mean, we can do this again, but I'm not really sure it's really necessary, but. Because I'm so used to reading the 600-page budget document that this almost seems too simple.
I think for sure it would have to be done the same thing fiscal. It would be on the same fiscal as our budget. But maybe there's a happy medium here. Maybe there were a few years back we came out. Remember we had a little pamphlet.
It was budget at a glance.
Yeah. That was maybe it could be more, a little bit less involved than this, but still a lot of this in there. And a little smaller, maybe a little less effort, but I remember that was always great to have out, and it wasn't as many pages as this, but it still provided a lot of detail. So maybe there's like a sweet spot here somewhere where we could, because I think this is great too. I think it's great to have something like this, but if we could maybe consolidate it a little bit more, and it's a great thing to be able to have and take out when we're, especially when we're out talking, and maybe if it wasn't as many pages, we could print a bunch of them out. So
I used to use the budgets. Summary, you know, when I used to go out and speak, and then cause it was something you could pass out at a meeting. It was real concise. This is a little bit more involved because it goes into highlights of every department.
This is great feedback. What we'll probably try to do next year is create some kind of executive summary annual report of the budget, kind of in a little more consolidated manner, and have that coincide with probably our final budget document. So thank you for the feedback.
Can I have one more comment?
You can.
If I can. The thing that I think is beneficial about this, that because I do like the budget at a glance, the budget at a glance that we had, easy for speaking, but most people don't know what the General Service Agency does for us, and they think that we're in charge of the animal services, but we're not. And the snapshot of each one of the departments, maybe we can consolidate down, but talking about what each department does is really crucial for the public. And again, I think this is more for the public. I would care more about what they think about it than myself. If they're getting something out of it, I think that would be really beneficial. So just a thought.
Okay.
Thank you.
Very good. Some food for thought.
Motion to accept it.
Okay. Move on. Do we have a motion to accept the?
Motion to accept.
A motion. We have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Passes 4-0. Moving on to item B18, Patricia Hill Thomas.
We needed that chair. Thank you, Christine. Okay, good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning.
Members of the board, Mr. Risen, Mr. Doering. We are thrilled to be here this morning. First of all, thank you. It's a great day for our capital projects efforts. Thank you for approving the last part of the transaction for the sale of the former Honor Farm to Camp Taylor. That goes to the Planning Commission this Thursday night, and we just can't wait. That's been a remarkable effort, and we're very honored to be part of that. Thank you also for approving the last part of the transaction for the sale of the former Medical Arts Building. We expect, after your approval this morning, and some additional work, that escrow will close on that in about the next week. So we're excited about that, and we thank you. Today, we are here to talk to you about the REACT Center project, something that we're very passionate about. That is our reentry and enhanced alternatives to custody training, pursuant to Senate Bill 1022. And I probably forgot to tell you, but I think you know I'm Patricia Hill Thomas, the Chief Operations Officer. Joining me in the presentation this morning is Captain Bill Duncan and Senior Management Consultant Mark Lozier, and a whole bunch of people back there who are a great team, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a moment. I love this quote. The way a team plays as a whole determines its success. You may have the greatest bunch of individual stars in the world, but if they don't play together, the club won't be worth a dime. Babe Ruth. You may have heard us say that before. We have, from your board's leadership, from the executive office and the project team, I think, in the world that plays very well together. Our motto is pretty simple. We plan our work and we work our plan. And we thought, if not for your positive thoughts, at least for ours, to encourage us to keep going in a very intense capital projects series of efforts, we'd remind ourselves that first county in the state to complete a SB 81 Juvenile Commitment Center project and sell the bonds with the state for that completed. Our honor farm burned down in just a few days. Hopefully it will become the new home of the nonprofit Camp Taylor, a place for children with serious heart disease. And we successfully completed the Unit 2 with the cash proceeds from insurance and occupied that in 2013. Our day reporting center is nearly complete. The invitations just came back from the printer, so they'll be on your desk and out in the mail today for the August 13th dedication of what I personally think is one of the most significant parts of our public safety expansion. That is a place for people to have an opportunity to change, and as Sheriff Christensen says so well, break the cycle of recidivism. And so that day reporting center we're going to celebrate here in just about a month. We're really proud of this work, and I think you know that it doesn't just happen. Our AB 900 Phase 2 project, which is a significant largest capital effort we've ever undertaken, is in construction. We're going to try to go live right now to the site and see if it works, because we have a camera, and this maximum medical health unit facility is awesome. First one in the state also under construction. What you're looking at there, oh, we zoomed too far in, but now you see a scaffold there. Ooh, we're gonna back up. You'll remember that this is the county's Project 3, which is funded by the county entirely, the intake release. And we are going to try to show you that they are lifting with the crane the concrete walls to the jail facility itself. And I'm not sure we're going to get there this morning. It's a little hard to operate, but we're going to show you the inside of the block. So we're going to go on for that and tell you that we do have a camera if you'd like to log on, and it gives us an opportunity to watch the progress and also be aware of what's happening at our site. Let's go back to the PowerPoint, Mark. And coming soon, our SB 1022 project, which is why we're here today. I'd really like to thank the Board of Supervisors for your vision. This is it. This is the last part for many decades and maybe many generations, we hope, of public safety center expansions and replacements. And as Supervisor DeMartini says, modernization. So a thank you to the board for your courage and your vision. A very special thank you to Supervisor Bill O'Brien and Supervisor Dick Monteith, who is your board's Capital Facilities Committee, and they work almost full time to keep encouraging us and to give us good advice. So thank you on behalf of the team to our two supervisors who spend a little extra time on this effort. They don't want to do this, but I'm going to ask them to stand, except for Bill and Mark don't have to stand, because I want to make sure that you know this stuff doesn't just happen. And this is not an 8-to-5 job. This is more like a passion and a commitment. This is what Babe Ruth was talking about, a team working well together. Sheriff Christensen sends his regrets. He was not able to attend today. Our team includes Captain Bill Duncan, Lieutenant Greg Clifton, who's not here this morning, I don't think, Lieutenant Jim Jacobs, retired Lieutenant Darrell Long. See, they're not standing. They usually really do well. Sergeant Steve Traverso, Mr. Mark Lozier here, Van Switzer, who came back, thank you, Van, to coordinate this project, Randy Cavanaugh, Brandon Galasso, Josh Ewing, Jim Quartz, and our key team members, Leticia Lomeli and Teresa Vanderveen. There is a story behind everyone's participation, and I decided this morning to just spend an extra moment, and thank you guys, to thank the team and to recognize them in front of you, because you just, until you get into it, you can't imagine what it takes to go from an idea to a dedication of these large and significant public efforts. There is a story everywhere about tenacity and compromise, endurance, respect, patience, which the team members have. Some do, I don't. Passion and what I call stick-to-itiveness. On this effort, because it's so program-based, we were joined by Sergeant Matt Huffman, Sergeant John Campbell, Sergeant Ernie Rosda, and Deputy Chris Williams, Deputy David Wipke, and Chaplain Mike Atiski, who rounded out our planning team for this effort and really brought tremendous value and insight into how to create what's perhaps going to be the most innovative detention facility in the state of California, at least in the words of the Board of State and Community Corrections staff who have reviewed these plans. So thank you to everyone. We have outside counsel Joan Cox with us today here to put together the bid documents if you approve us going forward today. So a special thanks to Jack as well. As I said, this team plays very well together, and as project manager, I'm very grateful. Here's the budget. This is almost $44.5 million, 90% of which is state money. We call this the blackout sheet because you can only spend what's in the boxes, and you can only spend it for those things. We have a very complicated relationship on these state lease revenue bond projects. And oh my goodness, for as many people as I introduced you to today, there are more people than that watching over our shoulder in Sacramento to make sure we do everything right. This project, as you know, was granted to Stanislaus County after the successful appeal of a decision by the Board of State and Community Corrections. And back in May, just a little more than a year ago, you approved the acceptance of that conditional award of $40 million. We were very pleased again to be the first in the state to ask the State Public Works Board to approve the project, and that had led us to today's results. In September, you authorized the selection of HOK design team along with LDA out of Stockton, California, HOK out of San Francisco, California. This was a competitive selection. And we were pleased that HOK wanted to work with us again, and they'll be presenting this morning. Tremendous, tremendous design team. We have been working really hard on this and everything else, and we bring to you today a major milestone in terms of the success. Today, we're going to ask you to accept the schematic design and authorize us to initiate the request for qualifications process for design build teams to build it. It is my pleasure to introduce to you my partner, the very distinguished and extraordinary Captain Bill Duncan.
Earlier you heard Patty talk about our team, and I couldn't be more proud over the past 9 years to have worked with representatives from our CEO team, Capital Projects, our partners at probation, my own sheriff's team, and of course, HOK and LDA are architects. But above and beyond that, I would be remiss if I didn't also recognize our leader. When you talk about patience, which she has none, tenacity, commitment, skill, knowledge, chains, whips, whatever is necessary, this young lady sitting to my right has been the true leader in these projects. And I give her full benefit of what has been accomplished today with our team. And I think Patty has to deserve that recognition, so I want to make sure that we talked about that. Why is this project so important? This is the culmination of expansion projects ending in a one-step, efficient, centralized detention system designed to enhance public safety, provide a spectrum of custodial levels of security in a safe, modern, state-of-the-art facility, provide comprehensive access to constitutional levels of health care, and expose inmates to a host of viable program opportunities to enhance training, education, and job skills, thereby creating an environment of change and reducing recidivism. When I think about all of our projects that Patty has alluded to, I think of the words custom and unique. Unit 2, the Honor Farm Replacement Building, was unique. It was a custom design by our staff. We designed it with enhanced security. We designed it with classrooms to provide available programs. And we were so successful that we have had visits from the governor, from other legislators, from other sheriffs, one of which told our staff that he was interested in using our design for their design for AB 900, which incidentally has yet to get off the ground. And of course, by you, the board. The custom design of AB 900 included two maximum security housing units, which again was custom design, and it was so efficiently done that we were able to increase our capacity from 192 beds to 240 beds in each of those two units. We have a custom healthcare unit, which has the ability to be licensed in the event of any potential litigation, and it will provide constitutional levels of healthcare for both medical care and mental health care for the inmates. We have a custom day reporting center, a beautiful building that you've seen that will provide our probation department with the opportunity to provide levels of service for those who are post-released from custody and those that are under probation supervision. Finally, we have a comprehensive administration building, which has a support services area, an administrative set of offices. We have a unique conference room that has the ability to serve as an emergency operations center. We have a centralized booking for both male and female inmates. And we have a centralized location for our transportation teams, including statewide transportation that today is located in our civil unit. Now we create a unique, custom-designed transitional program facility like nothing else in the state of California. The REACT Center will have 288 inmate beds housed in 4- and 8-bed dormitories with classrooms in each living unit and educational, rehabilitative, and recreational opportunities in an open day room. We will have an open-air courtyard dedicated to program and educational activities, and an administration building with an education family unification multi-purpose room and a centralized location for our jail alternatives unit with direct connectivity and linking to our new day reporting center. In essence, from booking to release and post-release, inmates will have access to a continuum of academic, vocational, job skills, and healthcare opportunities to protect public safety, reduce recidivism, and reduce the county's exposure to the glut of litigation surely coming to each county in the state of California. We have the opportunity to close the downtown men's jail as a traditional detention facility, but potentially utilize the building as a court holding facility because of its contiguous location to the existing courthouse, at least until the new courthouse is built and activated in Modesto. Finally, we will have one of the most modern, efficient, effective detention systems in the entire state of California, of which we can all be proud. Where is this building located? The REACT Center, the proposed site is directly west of the existing public safety center, directly east of the animal shelter, and directly south of the new public safety center. It will have direct access through the vehicle sally port to the existing public safety center, but of course will be separated, which is required by the state regulations. And of course, HOK will go into more detail with regard to the actual design. The next slide shows the proposed location as we face the east side of the animal shelter.
Thank you, Bill. It's my pleasure to reintroduce you this morning to David Crotty, the project manager from HOK. Also in the audience this morning is Kenneth Litwin. Ken is a great young architect, and he's just been remarkable along with David Crotty and his entire team on preparing this design to meet the objective of the REACT Center project. So good morning, David.
Good morning. Thank you, Patricia. Thank you very much for allowing me here today to present. We're, on behalf of the entire design team, HOK and LDA, and all of the other consultants that we have working on this project, we're very proud and excited to be working with the county again on this project. It really is a fantastic project to really see to completion what we've started and have been working with the county now for years to help on the public safety center. This is really just kind of the crown achievement of that whole process. As Captain Duncan was stating earlier, this project really is a focus on programs. And you'll see that in the design, that there's a lot of opportunity for programs to occur within here. We're not going to be going with your typical hard jail construction. It's a much softer look to it. We still focus on safety, primarily community safety, staff safety, inmate safety, always a primary concern with this type of facility. But this also has a very cost-effective component to it as well. We've gone through very rigorous exercises with the county, with the design team, with our cost estimators, with the county's cost estimators. We've gone through a very rigorous research and approach to the cost effectiveness of this facility. What we're going to be showing you today are based on the schematic design set, and it's just to give you a sense of the design and the architecture and the overall progress that we're making toward these bridging documents. There's an entire team working on this project. It's composed of structural engineers, mechanical, electrical, plumbing, security electronics, audio visual. We have an acoustical consultant, physical security, fire alarm. It's a very deep team that we have working with us to make sure that we capture all of the necessary requirements to have this function as it needs to within the entire context. But the most important team member actually is the county. The capital projects team has been a fantastic leader throughout the entire process, and the sheriff's department has been a great partner in developing the design with us. It's very much a team design project, and they've been thinking outside of the box, trying to go for a more softer approach, which I know has been a topic of many conversations, but they've achieved it in a very creative and outside of the box sort of thinking. So what you see here is the site plan, and you kind of get a sense, right dead center, that's our REACT project, and to the north of it we have the day reporting center, and you can start to see that we have a relationship to a lot of the buildings on this site. In fact, we, through the county's recommendation and request, we produced what we refer to as a neighborhood plan, and what this does is it looks at the entire site within context to make sure that the construction that we're working on, the projects that we're developing, makes sense within a larger context of the entire safety center and beyond. And so what you're seeing here is the relationship of the REACT to all of the existing buildings. And the existing buildings are shown here in that dark gray. To the north is the day reporting center. We wanted to make sure that we had a very clear and obvious connection to the day reporting center. That way there would be good circulation and travel between the two buildings. To the west side, you'll see the animal shelter, and our approach with this is to have a respectful separation from the animal center, that we're able to kind of contain the work that we're doing here so that it doesn't impede on any of the work they're doing at the animal center. And we have a direct connection to the public safety center, which is on the east side of the building. And you can see that we're actually going to be sharing some vehicle circulation in the area that Mark is kind of showing with his cursor there. That is a vehicle sally port, and this will be a shared connection between the existing jail and our proposed REACT center. The site circulation, you can see here, to the north of the REACT building, we have public parking, most obvious spot for the public to very easily find where they're trying to travel to. To the west of the building, creating a buffer between the REACT and the animal center, we have the more quiet staff parking area. Circulating around the entire building, we have a traffic loop. And what this will allow, it allow service to not interfere, but to be able to deliver goods to the facility. It'll allow emergency and fire services to have access to the entire building to increase safety. And there is, again, as I was mentioning earlier, the inmate circulation, which is kind of that connection to the public safety center. The next slide here, you see, so these are axonometrics or 3D views, and they're really just taken one from the front of the building, and that's the top slide, that's kind of the front, and then one is the same building, but just taken from the rear side, so that now you can really see all four sides of the building. We oriented the building so that it could support a concept that we developed with the county, which was a town square concept. And it really is to try to develop a relationship of the front of these buildings so that it had context with the surrounding public safety center buildings, to create at the front an open, inviting civic presence and something that spoke of entry to the general public so that people would be able to navigate the site more easily. The architecture that we're creating here, if you don't mind backing up a little bit, Mark, the architecture we're creating here, the front building is really a more simpler type of construction. And we went through a lot of cost review of this. We looked at a pre-engineered system. We looked at a site cast concrete system. And what we found is that a simple wood frame construction would achieve exactly what we needed to do and provide the most cost-effective approach. So that's the smaller front building that you see here, which we refer to as the administration building. In between the admin building and the southern building is a courtyard space that creates a nice buffer between the admin and then the housing portion. And this allows us to separate these two different types of construction, a very cost-effective approach. The southern portion that you see there is the housing component, and it contains the 288 beds within the facility. And then you can kind of see on the lower image there, we have an outdoor exercise yard kind of tucked in the corner of the building. And we oriented this so that it would be closer to the existing jail and further away from the animal center so that there's a respectful buffer between the animal center and what we're providing here. The construction of the housing portion, we're looking at a couple of different options. We're looking at very likely will be a concrete masonry unit, and we're proposing as an alternative to the general contractor that they may be able to use a site cast concrete. And this will allow the general contractor some flexibility in how they build this, and in turn, we're hoping will help with the cost. What you see here in plan, so at the very top of your screen, with all of the blue and orange and yellow, this is the admin portion of the building, and it's comprised of mostly administrative type buildings. It has the jail alternatives and some admin functions. It has a staff locker room, and as the captain was mentioning earlier, there's a program space, a family unification space in this admin portion, and it also contains our inmate transfer area, and that's what you see in the bottom right-hand corner of the admin building. And this has a connection then to the existing jail. The white space in between, that's our courtyard. And in the courtyard, it's just going to be a pleasant outdoor connection. It'll allow for some sort of program space to occur out there. It'll be very flexible. And then that also helps to divide the housing from this admin portion. And then the housing really is just a focus on classes and programs, as well as safely housing 288 inmates. And the makeup of this is there is some 8-man dorms at the top, and it kind of progresses a little bit harder as you move south down the building, and then you start transitioning into more typical cells. At the most southern portion of this building is a support space. It is where we would have our services come. We have a food service area here, and there's also a small break area for staff that would be working in the housing area. The view that you see on the right of the sign, this is the cell tier level, and it's basically a stacking of the cells that we have on the lower level. It just is a very efficient design. And you can see here in this view that there are, going through that north-south spine, there are two little nodes that you see in the housing. Those are officer stations, and I want you to just pay attention to how those officer stations now have visibility into, you know, 3 or 4 day room spaces there. So it's a very efficient design for staffing as well as for just building the building itself. This is a view from one of those staff stations, and this is obviously you face one way and you get to see into two of the day rooms. You turn around and you get to see in the other two day rooms. Visibility is very important in a facility like this. This is where you really start to get safety for the staff, safety for the inmates, and also it starts to enhance the experience as well. This you can see just how much visibility you get into these day rooms, and this is something that we're still developing right now with the Sheriff's Department, but we're at a pretty good spot right now with the design that you have in front of you. This is inside of one of these day rooms, and we're taking a more soft approach, and I hope you can see that this is a more soft approach than a standard jail. We don't have fixed furniture here. We have, you know, lighter weight furniture that people can move around. You can kind of see we have these blue seating area on the left-hand side of the screen, and that is kind of like a living room space area. There's actually a carpet down there. again, movable furniture so that it can be arranged and rearranged to suit whatever need they have. And right now we have it oriented toward a television screen that's on the back wall. So it creates kind of a community space. So this, you can see we have, in this particular one, we're looking at dorms. We have open front dormitories, so it really makes circulating in and out of the space more pleasant, and it's a much more normalized sort of design. And that is all I have today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David. Just to add to that, this is a different kind of detention facility directed to respond to realignment and to respond to the goal that people leave here successfully and never come back. And as David talked about, some of the materials, the softness and others, that's also a very cost-effective way, much less costly than the hard jail facility that we're constructing right across the campus. And that goal is to ensure that people don't come back to this and they benefit by their own choices in the programs that are provided by probation, by the sheriff, by behavioral health, and a host of community nonprofit partners. So I wanted to emphasize that. We are right on top of the budget. We know how to handle that usually, and the way that we handle that is make sure that we have lots of choices. We spend a lot of time talking about what the right delivery method would be for this, and we want to stick with the design-build approach so that we can really benefit from the design builder's perspective about how to make it less costly and more efficient during its final design and construction. The project manager, or we enlisted, as you heard earlier, independent cost estimating. This one has been estimated every which way to make sure that we can deliver it. The very magnificent Gino Colaccia, who retired and I hear is in the building today, I don't think he's in the room, and comes back to help us, conducted a all-day and evening value engineering session on this project, and over $1 million in changes which are currently being made to this design to simplify it and make it cost less and to be more efficient from an operational perspective, both from its utilities as well as its staffing. And I want to make that point. This is a project that's going to be staffed with our existing staff from the downtown jail. And except for court holding, and we've made that commitment, and that also enters into how we design and value engineer these projects. So that was the most successful, difficult and successful value engineering session that we ever had. We had about 35 professionals from all over the state to assist us. And those changes I mentioned earlier are being added to the design. We're also coming up with quite a list that we'll bring back to you of additive and deductive alternates that we can use in the best and final process to ensure we deliver this directly. The law is very clear that we can, oh, pardon me, I missed the over the shoulder. I think we almost have our own offices on S Street in Sacramento at the Office of the State Fire Marshal. I certainly do, as well as many team members. The State Fire Marshal has over $7 billion in projects currently in their office for review. And it's hard to get a county jail project through. There are county jail projects that have been up there for a year because they haven't been submitted in a complete way, and they require constant revision. This project is the first one that the State Fire Marshal and the Board of State and Community Corrections conducted a one-day intensive review. Our team, our designers came, they brought pencils and pens and post-it notes and the comments of the State Fire Marshal and the Board of State and Community Corrections that regulate Title 24 were made in the room, which is incredibly efficient and speaks to the quality of the design work that's presented, because not every project is, again, we've been the first one, we want to do this over and over again for the completion of this project. It's been a magnificent improvement by the State Fire Marshal. Those comments are also being integrated into the final design. Today is a very important step forward beyond the design. We're asking you to initiate the pre-qualification process for the design build teams. We will look for builders that are innovative, that have their own ideas about how to reduce the cost, change the schedule, and make this project be completed in the most successful way project within the project budget. You may recall from our SB 81 Juvenile Commitment Center days, go ahead, Mark, that there is always work outside the parcel. There is a dedication of this parcel of county land to the state of California until the state retires the lease revenue bonds. And we have some roadway improvements and others that are part of this project, and that will be the county's responsibility as well to ensure that there's access to this project at the site. There is also work to connect this project to the existing public safety center. Right now we estimate that it's about $130,000, and we have negotiated an agreement with the Department of Finance to pay for that work at the existing public safety center using the state lease revenue bond funds. So where are we going? Pre-qualification this summer. We're going to be back in the winter to ask you to select a design build team and award a construction contract. That design build team will complete the construction documents in next summer through winter, and we will be complete in the winter of 2018, and we will wrap up all phases of Public Safety Center replacement, expansion, and modernization. Mr. Loescher is going to take it from here.
So, good morning. So we have four recommendations this morning. The first is to accept the schematic design prepared by HOK. And our second recommendation is to authorize the project manager to complete and issue the request for statement of qualifications for the pre-qualification of design build teams for the REACT Center, and authorize the project manager to negotiate and sign contracts and work authorizations and purchase orders for professional services needed in the bridging document phase of the project. And finally, to authorize the project manager to take any and all necessary actions to manage the project during the bridging document phase to ensure the project progresses on schedule.
That completes our presentation. We're happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you guys very much. Any questions for Patty or Bill or Mark? Supervisor O'Brien.
Mr. Chairman, no question. I've had opportunities to see this project inside, outside, all the way through from my committee, but just wanted to talk a little bit and congratulate the team on getting this far of where we are. Want to talk a little bit about what this project means to our public safety, you know, as a holistic view of it. We can't afford to arrest and detain our way out of crime. And what this does is this now allows opportunity for those who are willing and capable of being rehabilitated a chance and get them back to productive part of society rather than just lock them up, throw away the key type mentality. Now, those who are not willing or are not successful, we still now with AB 900, we have those beds that are going to be able to keep them locked up. But here's an opportunity to hopefully, and part of the focus on prevention, try to change some people and get them back in a productive part of society. And so that's what's so exciting about this. It's almost a mindset change of those who are capable and willing. Those who aren't will still see the inside of a jail cell. Want to congratulate the team. I have to notice the colors of this PowerPoint and baseball theme. Reminds me of a winning team, and that's what we have, a winning team. They have three successful titles in recent years, have the groundwork for a current one that we're working on, and today they laid the groundwork for the fifth title. So congratulations, team. Great job.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. Supervisor Chiesa.
Just one point. The AB 109 funding formulas that are on the growth formula are all going to be based on outcomes of not sending people back to state prison and recidivism rate. So the whole focus of this, I'm glad that everyone has recognized that. I need everyone in the county to recognize that the times of sending people back to state prison in mass is not here. They're going to be our problem. The best thing we can do is try and rehabilitate them, give them the skills necessary so they don't find their way back. Some of them, I agree, some of them just won't learn, and we've got some new beds coming their way. But this is the way it needs to be. We need to give them the life skills necessary so that they can reacclimate back into society. So, I again, to the team, to all of you folks out there, I see you up here on the sixth floor three times a week. I know you're working really hard on this, and it shows. What a great product. Thank you.
Very good. Supervisor DeMartini.
Also, I think that we just have the best project team there is in the state. This is, I think, that the third major project we've had with the juvenile hall and the jail that's going up now, plus the, you know, the rebuilding of the Otter Farm, too, and the replacement of the Otter Farm. And now this. And this is almost a $45 million project, so this is a really big deal. This is a whole new concept into, you know, to rehabilitate prisoners. If you've ever had the opportunity to look at the downtown jail, since I've been through a couple of times with the sheriff, that is a jail. I mean, you just you walk into a cell and that's where you stay. They take you out to eat. But this one provides opportunities for people who want to change. And not everybody's going to want to, but I think some were going to take advantage of this. And our objective here is to reduce the recidivism and to provide opportunity to rehabilitate yourself for those who really want to. And if you don't want to, as Supervisor O'Brien said, we do have the jail just down the way, and if that's what you prefer, that's what you get. But it leaves, you know, a different concept to rehabilitation, kind of dealing with, you know, with mental illness, with addiction, and with some education to make yourself a productive member of society. I think this is a great project, and I have no doubt that this will be, as all the rest, on budget and on time.
Very good. Thanks, Jim. Just to reiterate what everyone has said here, great job, guys. Great work from everyone involved. I know it's so much effort involved. And it's just so nice, so proud of all you guys to see how we're just across the departments, how we're working towards not just filling up jails, not just, you know, we're looking to solve problems. And this is just another example. Bill says focus on prevention, trying to get to the root cause and instead of just treating the symptoms. And we really are, even all the way down to our jails, trying to figure out ways to keep people out of our jails. And we always say the ultimate goal is the jails are empty. And I know that's a pretty lofty goal, but just in the way that we're building and designing them now and the programs that we're going to be offering is going to help towards achieving those goals. So anyway, very proud of you guys. Great work that everybody's doing here. So thank you, and as we will move forward here.
Mr. Chairman, one last thought. I just don't want to leave the impression that if someone commits a crime, they're not going to do the time. It's just we want them to have the life skills when they get out that they don't return to a life of crime. So I don't want the public to misunderstand that criminals are not going to have to pay for their crime, but we just want them when they come out not to go back to that life of crime.
Very good. Okay. So if there's no other comments, do we have a motion?
With that, I'll make a motion to approve all four staff recommendations.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second that.
A second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 4-0. Thank you guys very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay, moving on to correspondence.
This board has received from the Community Services Agency the fiscal year 2014-15 annual self-evaluation of the child care and development alternate payment program stages 2 and 3 contracts.
Acknowledge receipt of report.
This board has received a letter from the water boards regarding the Central Valley Regional Water Quality Control Board public meeting to be held in Rancho Cordova on July 30th and 31st regarding the amendments to the water quality control plans for the Sacramento River and the San Joaquin River basins and the Tulare Lake Basin for evaluating the municipal and domestic supply, water supply beneficial use in agricultural dominated surface water bodies.
Refer to the Department of Environmental Resources, Department of Public Works, and the Agriculture Commissioner and Sealer of Weights and Measures.
And this board has received the Stanislaus County Grand Jury's 2014-2015 final report.
Refer to the Chief Probation Officer, the Sheriff, and the Chief Executive Office.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claims and refer to the Chief Executive Office, Risk Management Division. Any Board of Supervisor reports?
None. As Mr. Chairman,
sorry, Jim. There,
yesterday I had the opportunity to go to the construction site of the new coroner's facility with their CEO, Ryzen, and then looked at that. That's the second time I've been there as it's been under construction. I can say that this facility is coming along very nicely. It's is near finished. It's within about 30 days of opening. So it's a very updated facility compared to what we have now that'll serve this county for many years to come. Look forward to its completion in about a month.
Great. Thank you, Jim. Any other? Okay. CEO Risen.
Yeah, just real quick. At the state level, negative bailout is still alive, although I'm not sure how much. It's still linked with legislation regarding RDA dissolution that's being opposed by the California League of California Cities. And so we continue to monitor that. There was a good editorial, I thought, Sunday in the Bee, and hopefully we can get the local support to get that through. At the federal level, an encouraging sign, the Senate Environmental and Public Works Committee approved a new six-year surface transportation bill known as Developing a Reliable and Innovative Vision for the Economy Act, called DRIVE. And so that would replace the current transportation bill. So now we're expecting it to go to the full Senate. There is a additional funding of $15 billion that would need to be identified. But there is this is something we've been monitoring at the federal level for some time, hoping we could get some new transportation legislation approved. And so at least there's some sign of life up there for that. That concludes my report.
Very good. There's no other business. This meeting is adjourned.